All right, next is Austin.
Evening, everybody. Similarly, my report is in the packet, and I'd be happy to answer any questions anyone might have regarding the report.
Anybody have questions for Austin? Okay, thank you, Austin. New business, first reading of the revised FY 2025 budget. Dave and Mike? Maybe?
I'd refer to Dave here. Dave, can you just give a quick summary, like similar to last night?
Of course. Thank you, Madam President. So for the revision of the FY 25 budget, we first looked at the actual revenues that we anticipate. So we reallocated them accordingly and then looked at the activity that has gone on up to this point and redistributed the expenditures to essentially match what is actually happening. And we have a balanced budget in a revised form to be reviewed and hopefully approved, at least for this first reading.
Our question is, do we need two readings for the revised budget since we already have an adopted budget? Wouldn't we just approve it?
Thank you, Madam President. I believe we in the past have only done the one reading and approved it because it is already adopted.
Okay. I think we'll go that route then. are there any questions? Is there a motion to approve the revised 2025 budget?
This is Brenda. I'll make that motion.
It's Carlene, I second.
Motion by Brenda, second by Carlene. Roll call.
Amy?
Yes.
Hillary?
Yes.
Carla?
Yes.
Rayette?
Yes.
Carlene?
Yes.
Rita?
Yes.
Brenda?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Thank you. Next is the first reading for the FY 2026 budget.
Brad, this is Rita. I have a question.
Sure.
So it was publicized as a first reading, though. So should we have a second reading then on, or could we just go ahead and adopt it then? Because it was publicized as a first reading on the agenda. Does that matter or not? Just making sure we do our due diligence before we adopt it.
Yeah, no, I was thinking the same thing. What's your thoughts?
Well, it's just revised. I mean, we've already approved the 2025 budget, and this is just a revision to it.
It's an addition, because it's written on the agenda as a first reading.
We can go ahead and go and have a second one.
And it was the motion made to actually adopt it? Was the motion made to actually adopt it, though? That's what I missed.
Yes.
Okay. I thought it was just for first reading, so I misunderstood then. To adopt. You moved to adopt. Okay. Thank you.
Did we finish roll call?
Yes.
Okay. Just making sure. Thank you, Rita. First reading of the FY 2026 budget.
Thank you, Madam President.
Oh, dear. Okay, I'm sorry. I was ready to go.
Would you like a quick review?
Yes, sir. Please.
So for FY26, as we went over yesterday in the workshop, it's essentially we start with some assumptions and we look initially at the revenue that we anticipate based on what we know right now. So the budget is always a snapshot in time based on what you know. And you do see that there is a $212,000 deficit, which will not, there will be no deficit on the second reading as we'll make adjustments as necessary. But this is based on the staffing adjustments that were approved and what we anticipate the needs for the district in the coming year.
Thank you.
Is there a motion to put the FY26 budget on the table?
First reading of the FY2026 budget.
You have a second?
I'll second.
Roll call.
Earlene.
Yes.
Fred.
Yes.
Rita.
Yes.
Hillary.
Yes.
Amy.
Yes.
Brenda.
Yes.
Carla.
Yes.
Motion carries.
Thank you. Next reading will be next meeting. Next on the agenda is the FY or the 25-26 school calendar. We reviewed two different calendars last night, and option one and option two, and option two seemed to be the favored one amongst the community, parents, teachers. Is there a motion to adopt option two? 2025-2026 calendar.
I move to adopt option two, 2025-2026 calendar.
This is Brendel, second.
Roll call.
Hillary?
Yes.
Carla?
Yes.
Brenda?
Yes.
Rita?
Yes.
Fred?
Yes.
Amy?
Yes.
Carlene?
Yes.
Motion carries.
All right, thank you. Next is the ELA curriculum adoption.
Thank you, Madam President. I had the opportunity to lead the ELA curriculum adoption this year. We were able to include all language arts teachers in the adoption process at one point or another, which was really great. Instead of just having a small committee, we got more feedback that way, and we got input really from K-12, even though K-5 is the focus for this adoption. After looking at four different curriculas, three of which are on the state's approved list of curriculum, so we're not required to choose one off that list. But if we choose a curriculum that's not on the state's approved list, we would need to supplement the curriculum. So it's favorable to get one on the list. So three of the ones we looked at were on that list. Those were OCR from McGraw-Hill, Wonders or CKLA, and Wonders, which was also from McGraw-Hill, what we've been using previously. So a majority of our K-5 ELA teachers chose OCR or Open Court Reading as their first choice. Open Court Reading is probably the longest running curriculum, language arts curriculum that follows the science of reading, probably that's been used in the United States. It's the foundation of McGraw-Hill's program. So, most teachers are real familiar with it. Out of the ones we looked at, we had the most comprehensive writing program, which is one of the things that a number of our teachers really appreciated. And because it's so well established, it really has a great wealth of engaging reading materials for the kids to make it a little more fun, a little more engaging, which was an advantage over some of the other ones we looked at. And because of that, because it's so well established, it also has really great support for teachers. So we feel like it would be one that we could start training teachers on this spring if adopted. So we wouldn't have to wait till next year, and it'd be lots of ongoing support. So I ask the board, I'm recommending OCR, Open Court Reading, as our K-5 ELA curriculum to be adopted, and ask for the board's approval. I'd be happy to answer any questions about it as well.
Anybody have questions?
Was that in our packet? I never got the ELA curriculum in the board packet. Or are you just, just by word of mouth?
No. I put a link. So in my report, in the superintendent's report, this month and last month, and in an email, I sent the materials, the links. It's not in the packet.
So.
I mean, it's in my report, which is in the packet.
So for next time, could Cheryl put a hyperlink right where the thing is supposed to be? Because I was so confused.
Yeah, that's on me then. I'm sorry. I put the hyperlink in my report then and not in the section for the curriculum. That's my mistake.
I must have missed that then. Thank you.
Is there a motion to adopt the ELA curriculum?
This is Brenda, so moved.
It's Carlina, second.
Roll call.
Amy?
Yes.
Brenda?
Yes.
Hillary?
Yes.
Carla?
Yes.
Rita?
Yes.
Rhea?
Yes.
Carlene?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Thank you. Next up is teacher contracts. Like we have contracts for Jacob Mark Stepitin, teacher Akutan, Joshua Blodgett, teacher 0.5 FTE, King Co, Danielle Carlson, teacher counselor 0.5 FTE, Sandpoint, Madison Phillips, teacher Sandpoint, and Peyton Stroud, teacher Sandpoint.
Before we do that, I was under the impression that Sandpoint would have 7 full-time teachers. And King Co would have 6.
Yeah, so through the board, if I may, to fill those FTE, we still would need to hire 1 teacher at King Cove, and that job is currently posted, and we're interviewing candidates for that. We're hoping to find a science teacher, a teacher with a science credential. And then that would also leave 0.5 at Sandpoint, and if approved here tonight, we will be posting that this week. And that 0.5, again, we're hoping to find someone with a credential for secondary, well, we don't know, a generalist, hopefully. So the hiring we asked to approve tonight is not conclusive. It's not, they wouldn't complete the hiring.
This is Brenda, make a motion to accept those candidates.
Ms. Carlina, second.
Roll call.
Hillary? Yes.
Carlene?
Yes.
Rayette?
Yes.
Amy?
Yes.
Brenda?
Yes.
Rita?
Yes.
Carla?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Right, thank you. Next is the business manager contract.
Thank you, Madam President. I'll address this. So as we all know, a couple months ago, Dave Nielsen announced his retirement. We wish him the best. And he will be missed, as we can see from the most recent, both the budget revision and the proposed budget for next year. We should be, Aleutians East is in really great position financially compared to most districts in the state right now. And a big part of that is the response, the fiscal responsibility that he's shown the last couple of years, last decade. It's no small feat what we've done here. We got help with some extra funding, but if you recall, we started the year with a significant deficit, and now for Dave to announce that the revised budget he put together is balanced is remarkable. So he will be missed, but knowing that he was retiring, I talked to the board about vetting other services. The you know, business managers are in short supply right now, especially ones who are expert in school finance, and specifically Alaska school finance. So I did look at a number of contracted services and discussed some of those with you previously. The one I'm going to recommend for hire is Lisa Pierce. She has a business called Birchwood Services, currently out of Montana. And if hired, she would be working it contractually, so not here in Sandpoint. Just a little bit about her background. She currently works for the Juneau School District. She was brought in as their CFO in mid-year during their financial crisis this past year. Did a great job riding the ship there in Juneau, but that was just an interim gig. They just hired her to fix what was going on there. She's done a great job and she's moving on. Prior to that, she was CFO of a number of school districts down south, but also she spent 4 years as the CFO for Fairbanks North Star Borough School District, and then also a couple of years as the chief business officer of Kodiak Island Borough School District. So she has extensive Alaska experience, which is something that I think is really important to all of us, that she understands the nuances of our state. So be happy to answer any questions, but ask the board to approve hiring Lisa Pierce and Birchwood Services on a contractual basis to serve as our business manager.
Are there any questions? I would entertain a motion to
I move to approve Lisa Pierce with Birchwood Services on a contractual basis for the 2025-2026 school year for business manager.
I'll second. Roll call.
Brenda?
Yes.
Carla?
Yes.
Rita?
Yes.
Rhea?
Yes.
Carlene?
Yes.
Hillary?
Yes.
Amy?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Okay. Next up is personnel, new hires. Brittany Hitchmanek, custodian for King Cove.
Make a motion to approve new hire Brittany Hitchmanek for custodian King Cove.
I'll second. Roll call. Rita?
Yes.
Brenda?
Yes.
Carlene?
Yes.
Amy?
Yes.
Hillary?
Yes.
Carla?
Yes.
Rhea?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Resignations. As of March 2025, Telio Baldwin, elementary teacher, Sandpoint; Damian Farr, custodian, King Cove.
Make a motion to accept the resignations as presented.
Carlene, I second.
Okay. Motion by Brenda, second by Hillary. Roll call.
Carla?
Yes.
Rita?
Yes.
Rayette?
Yes.
Amy?
Yes.
Brenda?
Yes.
Hillary?
Yes.
Carleen?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Public comments on non-agenda items.
I forgot to say two things. This is Matt Brown. Can I speak real quick?
Oh, sure.
Is the correct time?
Yeah.
Oh, it's just really random, but the salad bar is incredible. No, for real, like I'm not even joking. I'm like very jealous of that. And then I've never seen better school food. So King Cove's food is incredible. Like I've really great cooking and great food. And then the second thing is that I have an AD meeting I have to go to in the spring, and I'm definitely going to be advocating for our district to host volleyball and basketball. It's not totally up to me, but we're definitely going to do our best to host it in district next year.
Thank you. Austin, did you have something?
I did. Yeah, I wanted to take a quick second while there's discussion around Dave retiring, just to say that, you know, I've worked with Dave in many capacities for many, many, many years, to know his wife and children while they were here, and have always appreciated Dave on a personal and professional level. And so just want to thank him for not just the work he's put in for the district, his consistency and effort, but also just being a good, you know, work friend and a person that I've appreciated knowing over the years. So just want to congratulate him for his retirement and wish him the best and say thank you for all he's done.
Thanks, Austin. Board comments, starting King Cove.
Nothing.
I
don't have anything.
Okay.
Carleen? Excuse me. I think it was Karen saying that they got a new playground or something. I know last year we were saying that we had all that, like the tire bits or whatever. Like the plate, you know, that you put in the playground. We got a new playground here too, and we chose not to use that stuff. So we have like nine bags or something like of it?
14 or 24.
Like maybe 15 or 19 bags of that stuff. And I think the school district wanted it, but then something, I don't know what happened, but Shane was saying, if somebody wants to set up the shipping for it on Coastal or on the ferry, then he'll move it down to the dock and get it staged so we could send it.
I could someone solid number for tomorrow for somebody for how many bags are there if they're interested in it.
How many bags?
Not that high much stuff, is it?
Yeah.
Wasn't there like all
the
net over there?
Like tire bits.
Oh, I know, socks are full of them.
They're like 3,000. They're 1-ton bags, I believe, most likely.
We have 15.
Yeah, they're like big.
Like salt bags, there, whatever you call them.
Big salt bags. They're like those big fish.
Yeah, they should be 1-ton bag or
yeah,
8,000 pounds.
Yeah, there's a bunch of them.
Each bag?
They might. Probably around there, but I.
Well, how big of a playground do they get? Does a lot?
It takes a lot.
Yeah.
8 to 12 inches. Your playground should have 8 to 12 inches of footing underneath your areas where kids could fall. So. Might want to double check before you give your bags of mulch away.
Oh, we just chose not to use it. We're choosing to let our kids fall on the rocks. We're willing to take the chance.
I want to be clear at this public meeting that was a joke. For the record.
Some parents and stuff, they don't like the smell of the rubber tire stuff, including me. I can't stand the smell of it. It gives me an instant headache. So, if the district or King Cove or some point want that stuff, then it's still available.
Okay, thanks, Carlene. Are there any comments at that point? Hillary?
I have a question for Mike. Now, when I went through all the principal's reports, all of our schools have very major work that needs to be done this summer. So is the borough working on all that? Are they going to have different contractors in each of these places? Because they have some big jobs this summer.
Yeah, so the summer work that's already planned is the major construction project at Sandpoint that covers all, you know, a long list of things. Just had a long meeting about door hardware the other day, which was the last bit of a bit of info they needed. And then in False Pass, we're hoping to get all the siding redone, and the tribe there has stepped forward to help with that project. And then Matt and I are talking about some floor work that needs to be done there. And then there'll be the yearly boiler work at all the schools, checkups. And then the other thing we have planned that's a big project that's already planned is the replacing all the old copper water pipes in King Cove School with PEX. So those are the ones that are scheduled to occur already.
What about the roof project they were talking about for False Pass?
So we'll assess that this summer, but we don't have a contract for that yet. But the borough will address that.
Okay. So I saw that in there. That's a big project also.
It is. We need to assess it first, though. So that hasn't been done yet.
What about for Accutan? What do we have planned for Accutan School?
No major project for Accutan School this summer that I know about. They had, you know, quite a bit of work done last year on the back stairs and the boiler. We were supposed to have windows done, so I'm hoping that'll still be windows and trim at the front there at Accutan. I'm not going to guarantee that's going to happen. It originally was on the plan this summer. And some of the contractors are kind of sort of fell through on that one. So we're still working on it, but I can't guarantee that one's going to happen.
Okay, thanks.
And that siding in the windows are a real concern. You know, False Pass, that's critical. You know, it's seeping into the walls and it's really harming the walls. So that getting done this summer is critical. And, you know, Accutan's definitely next on that list, so we don't have further damage.
Which sounds critical to me.
Any other?
All right, thanks, Mike.
Comments? Amy? No? Robert? No? Okay. Hearing none. Agenda items for the next meeting?
And the second reading for the 2026 budget, and then scholarships. And that's all I have.
When are scholarships due?
I think the 11th. Yeah, the 11th or the 12th, whatever your rating is.
I thought it was the 12th.
Yeah. It was two. Okay.
Sorry. Add if there's anything else after. And the date of meeting, April 29th? Last Tuesday? I think.
April 29th.
Yep, April 29th.
First of the evening.
Oh, yeah,
I'm calling. I think it's the
22nd. Oh, fourth
Tuesday?
Yeah. Actually, the first is a Tuesday.
Is there 5 weeks that month? Oh.
1, 2, 3, 4. April 22nd.
Oh, April 22nd. Okay. If there's nothing else, I would entertain a motion to adjourn.
Motion.
So moved.
I'll second. Roll call.
Amy?
Yes.
Brenda?
Yes.
Hillary?
Yes.
Carla?
Yes.
Rita?
Sure. And I'll get pictures of it and
yes. Carly?
Yes.
Dimensions of the bag and
carries.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Good night, everybody.
Thank you, everybody.
Good night.
All right, that was the Aleutians Eastboro School District. Regular meeting of the school board. Everything looks like we'll be pointing towards one more meeting next month. One more in a long, slow series of democracy. Let's see, April 22nd, Tuesday. Bet you 6:30. I had written it down wrong on the web, but got it. So this will be archived at apradio.org. Going back to the 90s. And then our newly scheduled programming, Fresh Air with Terry Gross from National Public Radio.
We think This message comes from Capella University. With Capella's FlexPath learning format, you can set your own deadlines and learn on your schedule. A different future is closer than you think with Capella University. Learn more at capella.edu.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Dave Davies. If you follow the news, you know these are strange and turbulent times in Washington, as the Trump administration seeks to shrink and recast the federal government with blinding speed and fury. Trump's opponents would no doubt like to see Congress assert its authority to stop the dismantling of agencies and programs its past members have authorized. We haven't seen much of that, but we have seen bills introduced to enable a third Donald Trump term, rename Dulles Airport after him, and carve his image into Mount Rushmore. Whatever happens, our two guests today have the experience, insight, and sources to tell the story. Annie Carney and Luke Broadwater are both veteran reporters who cover Washington for the New York Times, and they've written a new book about the 118th Congress, the one elected in 2022. It's a look inside the corridors of power when Democrat Joe Biden was president, dealing with what the authors say was the first MAGA-controlled Congress, one that fully adopted the extremism and stagecraft of Trumpism. There are fascinating accounts of high-stakes negotiations and of House members cursing, insulting, and threatening each other, but not a lot of serious legislating. The House passed only 27 bills that became law in its two-year session, the lowest number since the Great Depression. Before joining the New York Times in 2018, Annie Carney worked at Politico, the New York Daily News, and the New York Post. Luke Broadwater worked for nearly a decade at the Baltimore Sun, where he won a Pulitzer Prize for stories about a scandal at the state's largest hospital system that led to the resignation of Baltimore's mayor. Carney and Broadwater's new book is Madhouse: How Donald Trump, MAGA Mean Girls, a former used car salesman, a Florida Nepo baby, and a man with rats in his walls broke Congress. We recorded our conversation yesterday. Annie Carney, Luke Broadwater, welcome back to Fresh Air.
Thank you so much for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
That is a colorful title. And I thought we would begin with an audio clip of a moment in 2024 which kind of captures some of the craziness of this particular Congress and its breakdown in civility. This was a hearing at the House Oversight Committee where the ostensible purpose was to consider a motion to hold Attorney General Merrick Garland in contempt of Congress. Now, the sound we'll hear, you might have heard it before. It's a little confusing at moments. We'll hear eventually from Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, but it begins when Texas Democrat Jasmine Crockett is criticizing Republican Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene, and Greene makes an insulting comment about Crockett's eye makeup. Let's listen.
Do you know what we're here for? You know we're here about AG.
I don't think you know what you're here for.
Well, you the one talking about.
I think your fake eyelashes are messing up.
No, ain't nothing.
Hold on. Order.
I do have a point of order, and I would like to move to take down Ms. Greene's words. That is absolutely unacceptable. How dare you attack the physical appearance of another person?
Are your feelings hurt?
Her words down.
Oh, girl,
baby girl.
Oh, really?
Don't even play.
Baby girl,
We are going to move, and we're going to take your words down.
I second that motion.
I'm just curious, just to better understand your ruling, if someone on this committee then starts talking about somebody's bleach blonde, bad built, butch body, that would not be engaging in personalities, correct?
A what now?
Chairman, I make a motion to strike those words.
I'm trying to find clarification
on what qualifies.
Chairman,
I have no idea what you just said.
We're not gonna do this. Look, you guys earlier literally just
you just voted.
Good times under the Capitol Dome.
That was an insane night.
Well, so either of you can pick this up, but just tell us a little, give us some context for this and what it tells us about this Congress.
Well, first of all, let's remember, this is a hearing that's happening at night to start with. And why is it happening at night? Because some of the members who are on this committee had spent their work day that day in Manhattan outside of the federal courthouse where Trump was on trial, defending him because a gag order prevented him from speaking for himself. So it's already a little emotional, like different vibe when you start a hearing at 8 p.m. Famously, like anything that starts in the evening in Congress, many people are drunk. there's like something called the drunk caucus that other members refer to. Leadership is always wary of scheduling votes at night because drinking is a problem.
You know, sorry to interrupt, but yeah. I read this in the book and I was astonished to read this. Really?
Yes. It's among people who work in the Capitol and reporters, it's like not a revelation. Everyone just knows this, but it is a revelation to most people who don't. So anyway, this is starting at night. When you were playing that clip, I just couldn't help but thinking that everyone is being peak themselves in that moment. Ostensibly, like, who even remembers what this hearing was about? What happens here is that Green makes what Crockett thinks is a racist attack, kind of making fun of her eyelashes, which Crockett in an interview later told us she's seen those attacks online. It's like a ghetto girl thing. And Marjorie Taylor Greene was picking up like a loaded comment to make a comment about her. And all the crazy things that Green has said during her time in Congress, talking about eyelashes might really not rank up there, but there is one hard and fast rule that you can't do face-to-face ad hominem attacks. It's known as, quote-unquote, engaging in personalities. So there's not a lot of rules in Congress, but she actually can't engage in personalities, and this was an ad hominem attack. So they go after Green, and when Jasmine Crockett comes up with her famous now line, she smartly phrases it as a question. So it's not actually a direct ad hominem attack at Green. So they're all kind of playing a game here. And one interesting thing is you can hear AOC getting pretty heated here. And in some ways, this was a moment that Green won. Green is constantly wanting to engage with AOC. She wants to get into it with the most famous House Democrat. And usually AOC does not take the bait. But in this clip, you can hear she gets to her. She takes the bait. She gets into a heated back and forth with Green, which is kind of what Green wants here.
Right. Calls her baby girl.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, in some ways, this was the real moment when the Democrats in the House embraced the Republican style of politics. Mm-hmm. During this Congress, the first Congress controlled by the MAGA movement, pretty much every Republican who got themselves on TV did so by emulating the style of Donald Trump. And Democrats had always believed in Michelle Obama's axiom, which was when they go low, we go higher. And Jasmine Crockett clearly decided when they go low, we go lower. And we're gonna fight them down in the mud. And, you know, it sort of typified and exemplified everything that this Congress became, right. And that is dysfunctional, ceding power to Trump, really just fighting to make viral moments.
Right. And, you know, whether going lower is an improvement or not is a matter of opinion. Whether this was like a great moment for Democrats or not is really a matter of opinion. But usually when things go viral online, it's not a great sign for the functionality of Congress. And, you know, in this case, no one even remembered what the hearing was ostensibly about.
You know, it's interesting because I remember in the book where you describe this shift in strategy by Democrats. We're not going to sort of stay above the fray. We are going to engage and give it right back to them. And that part of the theory was that Republican members would think about what their future careers will be like if they have embarrassed themselves and adopted things which, you know, defy reality or decorum. Did that strategy work at all?
Yeah, so I don't believe it has worked according to the election results. It seems that voters actually like the fisticuffs. They like Donald Trump's brand of politics. Certainly in these red districts, they like it. And this is a successful way to win primaries on the right, is to be the loudest, the biggest fighter, the most extreme. That gives you a loyal, loving fan base on the right. And so, you know, what we're seeing now in the Democratic Party is I think there's a desire among the populace for the Democrats to become more of the party of fighting and not the party that plays by, you know, Robert's rules and keeps things super professional.
You know, one other thing that I just, a general observation about the account of this Congress that you provide us is how many times there are physical threats among members. And I mean, in many cases, leaders of Congress, things, you know, say that again and I'll kick your you-know-what or I'll drop you. You both have been around a while. Luke, I know you covered City Hall and the Maryland legislature. You ever seen anything like this?
Not like this. I mean, you're right. That was a striking revelation as well. We would often go back to people and ask them what happened in this room or that room. And time after time, they would recount how somebody said something to them. And they would say, you know, if you do that again, I'll knock you out, or some other sort of threat. And some of these were examples that played out on the House floor, you know, Eric Swalwell and Kevin McCarthy coming up to each other and using the P word, right? You had Tim Burchett and Kevin McCarthy in the hallway. You had
Tim Burchett and Patrick McHenry on the floor. A lot of it is Republican on Republican, not just intra-party feuds.
Yeah, oftentimes it's members of, you know, the same caucus even getting into it with each other. Obviously, we talked about Lauren Boebert and Marjorie Taylor Greene and why they hate each other so much. One thing that I learned in that scene with Jasmine Crockett in the oversight room is, going back and reporting it later, is that Lauren Boebert is actually the preferred Republican of the Democrats, that they see her as much easier to work with. And actually, she has friendships on the left. When her grandchild was born, Jamie Raskin, of all people, sent her a baby gift that said, I may take a lot of naps, but I'm still woke.
Reporters are sometimes criticized for revelations in books that people wish they had read in the newspapers. As you did this, did you put some of this stuff in the paper, or did you mostly save it for the book?
We did. I think that along the way, I found reporting the book a great help to my day job writing about Congress for the New York Times. I got a lot of daily stories out of book reporting. But you can also, you're doing interviews under embargo. So people are willing to tell you things that they wouldn't tell you for the daily paper when you say, this is not for use until March 2025. So I think that criticism, I understand why it's made, but it's not really fair. A lot of stuff isn't available in real time. And I think it's valuable to have it out eventually for history, for understanding the moment better. But it's just simply not available to use in real time. So would you rather have it never, or would you rather have it later? And the book is the later. So sometimes we would be able to peel off stuff and ask sources, is it okay if I use this now? But it's up. The agreement when you do these interviews is that it's embargoed for the book, and you can't really violate that agreement.
Well, I want to talk about what's going on these days in the Capitol. I mean, your book deals with the 2-year period that ended, I guess, in January. But boy, a lot's happening right now. And Democrats are trying to figure out how to deal with Donald Trump, who is riding a wave, and with his team trying to reshape government in dramatic fashion. And there are real divisions within the Democratic Party on what to do about it, how to handle it. I mean, you've written about how the Senate Minority Leader, Chuck Schumer, kind of has a take-it-all-on approach, you know, respond to everything, whereas Hakeem Jeffries, the leader of the Democrats in the House, kind of picks his battle. I guess a difference in emphasis. I'm wondering what you are hearing from rank-and-file Democrats in Congress about this debate.
Frustration. I think, you know, right now what's happening is Chuck Schumer has become the bogeyman of the Democratic Party among rank-and-file House Democrats and among voters for just emotion and frustration at just wanting to do more, wanting to fight back. And this is because last week he voted with Republicans to stave off a government shutdown. If Democrats had not joined Republicans in the Senate, we would be in a government shutdown right now. And Chuck Schumer has been defending this decision for the past week, saying that would have been much, much worse. Elon Musk and Donald Trump wanted a shutdown. It would have allowed them to decide which programs are essential and not essential, and therefore never bring them back. His example that he's been talking a lot about is SNAP, food stamps. They could just say during a shutdown, this is not essential. And during a shutdown, there's no court check. So that could just go away. So on the merits, there's a good argument there. It's understandable why he did what he did. On the politics, there was white hot anger at caving to Donald Trump. One day he said he was going to stand up and be against it. The next day he voted for it. So he's under a lot of pressure right now. I think the issue with that's going on right now is there was not a lot of explaining that a short-term government spending bill in March of 2025 is not the fight. People want to know, what is the fight? Where are we going to have an opportunity to stand up to Republicans? This looked like one of the few times when Democrats had a role to play, and they caved. Chuck Schumer's been hammered by Nancy Pelosi. Jeffries has been not really supportive. He was asked, do you have confidence in Schumer's leadership? And he said, next question. So there's a lot of intensity right now between the House and the Senate. You've seen Bernie Sanders and AOC out there doing these huge rallies over the past few days. I mean, it's not clear yet what Democrats are doing, but there's obviously such a huge, deep desire to do more than their leaders are currently doing.
And people feel that Schumer is out of step with the moment. You know, he sat for us for the book, and he told us, these are his words, that once the Republican Party removes the turd of Donald Trump, it will go back to being the old Republican Party. And he described Donald Trump as being sort of an evil sorcerer, in his words, that had sort of cast a spell over Republicans and Republican voters. And what we really discovered reporting this book out is that every member of the House Republicans that we talked to had embraced the MAGA movement and made it their own. It was not solely the function of Donald Trump anymore. And they had taken it in some instances even further to the right than where Donald Trump is with MAGA. And so, you know, our belief is, having done all these interviews, that MAGA will exist long after Donald Trump leaves the political scene.
Right. And there's plenty of evidence in stories you tell in the book that if people forget the MAGA base, they will pay for it. And so
yes,
it's not just Donald Trump. It's right. The people who have come to believe.
Right. Another thing that's developed is it's not just Donald Trump. In fact, there's a whole right-wing ecosystem that does the work for him of threatening, of making you fall in line. He really doesn't need to anymore be the one to threaten you with a primary challenge if you don't vote the way he wants you to vote. There's Charlie Kirk and Steve Bannon and this whole ecosystem that knows the playbook and doesn't need direction. So it kind of just exists on its own now.
Yeah, two of the, I guess we could call them characters in the book, were Steve Bannon and Russell Vogt, who now are wielding even more influence in the Trump administration. And we document in this book how they were able to sort of dictate how things were happening on Capitol Hill through their allies in the House Republicans and also through their influence, especially on Bannon's podcast.
Mm-hmm.
He was able to text directly with members and acted in some cases like a stage parent, sort of coaching them on how to approach certain situations to get the most MAGA outcome.
You know, people know of Steve Bannon. They may know he has a podcast, but it's a four-hour daily podcast. Is this right?
He's recording 4 hours every weekdays and 2 hours every weekend. And what he's really doing, his recording studio is in his basement, which is about a stone's throw from the Capitol. And he allows these far-right members that he agrees with to come on, and he gives them a platform. They raise money there. Like, he asks, like, where do you send donations? He prompts them multiple times during the interview. He gives them a platform that allows them to circumvent usually how you gain power in Washington, which is through leadership, through, like, the leadership suites and lobbyists and mainstream media. This circumvents that. This is just directly to the base, and he gives them this huge platform, and there's just this like constant stream back and forth between Bannon's house and, you know, the House floor. They just walk back and forth. He worked a lot closely with Matt Gaetz on unseating Kevin McCarthy. He was like a strategist and a stage parent. So that is a whole new ecosystem that's helping the far right members.
We're going to take another break here. Let me reintroduce you. We are speaking with Luke Broadwater and Annie Carney. Both are correspondents for The New York Times. Annie Carney covers Congress. Luke Broadwater covers the White House. Both of them were deeply involved in covering the last Congress, and they have a new book about it. It's called Madhouse: How Donald Trump, MAGA Mean Girls, a former used car salesman, a Florida Nepo baby, and a man with rats in his walls broke Congress. They'll be back to talk more after this short break. I'm Dave Davies, and this is Fresh Air.
This message comes from Carvana. Finance your next car the convenient way with customizable, transparent terms all online. Make your budget work for you and swap hassle for convenience with Carvana.
Hi, this is Molly CV Nesper, digital producer at Fresh Air.
And this is Terry Gross, host of the show.
One of the things I do is write the weekly newsletter.
And I'm a newsletter fan. I read it every Saturday after breakfast. The newsletter includes all the week's shows, staff recommendations, and Molly picks timely highlights from the archive. It's a fun read.
It's also the only place where we tell you what's coming up next week, an exclusive.
So subscribe at whyy.org/freshair and look for an email from Molly every Saturday morning.
You know, Annie Carney, you were saying that, and I think you both mentioned this, that there were cases in the last Congress where there were Republicans who publicly towed the MAGA line and were good soldiers, but that privately had serious qualms about it. And I'm wondering if you are hearing privately from Republican members these days whether they're worried about the cuts that the administration is making through Elon Musk and DOGE and, you know, I don't know, the effect of tariffs. Are they concerned about what this is going to do to Republicans' popularity?
Yes. I mean, vulnerable Republicans are very scared. Like our colleague Katie Edmondson did a profile of David Valadao, a very vulnerable member from California, who, I mean, a huge percentage of his state is on Medicaid. So this idea, this threat that they're going to cut Medicaid is very worrisome for some Republicans across the country. And we've seen some senators trying to support DOGE in abstract, but trying to defend against cuts in their state. So they're scared because the cuts in their state could lead to them losing their jobs. We've also seen senators like Tom Tillis of North Carolina try and find a way not to support some of these most controversial cabinet nominees. Tom Tillis went to great lengths to try and find a way to vote against Pete Hegseth for defense secretary. And ultimately, it was too hard, and he fell in line. Joni Ernst, too, is of Iowa. She's a survivor of sexual assault, has a military background, expressed concerns about Pete Hegseth, and the right-wing echo chamber threatened a primary challenge, and she fell in line. So we've seen tiny attempts to break with the party line, and those who want a political future, who care about getting reelected, eventually cave. There's not a lot of room for that right now, but certainly vulnerable Republicans are very concerned about potential Medicaid cuts that would be deeply unpopular with their voters.
I'm wondering how they feel about Elon Musk generally. I mean, this, you know, he came in and, you know, got a hold of the payment system and the Treasury Department and was able to essentially, as he said, it put AID in the wood chipper, the Agency for International Development. How do they view his role?
I mean, it looks to me like they are embracing Elon Musk and his mission very much so. Each chamber has set up its own DOGE caucus, and they are trying to implement his cuts into their various spending plans. When he comes to Capitol Hill, he gave out his private cell phone number to members. He has tried to court people individually, and, you know, he's posing